Welcome to the Gaming Insurrection Editors Podcast. This is week number one, episode one, with Gaming Insurrection Editor Lindsay Mosley. And I'm just deciding to do one of these podcasts weekly because there's some things I'd like to talk about that, since we don't update every week, we're quarterly, that I would like to talk about that are important to me and that I'd like to do podcasts on. So this is our start. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll be joined by a special guest, my contributing writer slash partner, Jamie, who is currently not available to do podcasts, but should be available to come in and talk about things that are important to him and give us his views on video games, past and present, and possibly future. So anyway, to get started, this first podcast, it's just me, and I'm wanting to talk about my gaming memories, which are so important to me. They're such an important part of myself as a gamer and where I've come from and where I'm going as a gamer. I'm 28 years old now. I just turned 28 this year. And I've been gaming now for 21 years. And that's a very long time to call yourself a gamer. I've seen systems come and go. I've seen gaming companies come and go. And it's been a hell of a ride. Let's put it that way. Especially with certain things such as Sega going out of the business, the hardware business, and staying in the software business. It's scary now for me to see Sega making games for Nintendo. I mean, who would have ever thought that would ever happen? But, you know, things change, I guess. So let me give you a little bit of background on myself. Like I said, I'm 28 years old. I started gaming in 21 years ago, and that would be 1988. I was 7 years old, and my older brother, who's 10 years older than myself, sat me down and said, you know, here, play this. Sit down and shut up and play this, because he was supposed to be babysitting. And it was a Nintendo. It was an NES. And I was just enthralled. I had never seen anything like that in my life. I mean, we went to the arcade, but there was no, we didn't have that kind of thing at home. We had an Atari, but I mean, it wasn't mine. It was his. And I was specifically told, do not touch this system. You don't know what you're doing. Leave it alone or you'll break it. So, being the overeager little girl that I was, because my brother said to do something, of course I did it. It was, you know, my brother could have told me to go jump off a cliff and I would have just immediately done it. And I said, so he says, well, you know, play this and don't make any noise. Because he was supposed to be making some records. He was recording records. He liked to DJ at the time. So I'm sitting there playing, I think it was WrestleMania, because I think that was the first little game that we had, and it was the greatest thing in the world. I was so enthralled with it. I thought it was, you know, the end-all, be-all of things to do. Shortly thereafter, my mom came home, so I got kicked out of his room anyway, but later on, I remember just begging him, oh my gosh, let me play this, let me play this, let me play this, I want to play some more. And so he sat down with me and he let me play a couple things. After that, we wound up getting I think Double Dribble and Track and Field 2. Which Double Dribble, as you'll see coming up in the next quarter, where it was a very important game in terms of sports for me. My husband is probably going to write about it for the next quarter, but I also play Double Dribble, and Double Dribble was so crucial. It was so crucial. It was the first sports game that I ever played, aside from WrestleMania, because WrestleMania really doesn't count. It's more sports entertainment. It's the WWF likes for you to believe. I refuse to call them WWE. But Double Dribble was the first real sports game that I played. It was basketball, and basketball was a major deal in our household, too. As you'll see, Jamie likes to talk about the fact that they talked about basketball a lot in his household, and we did, too. My brother and I watched basketball. He played basketball. He loved basketball. We had a basketball goal in our backyard, and he took the time to prepare the ground for it. He put up the metal pole and put up the hoop and everything. And to this day, I mean, I can easily go in my mom's backyard and pick out the spot where there was a goal. It's been since moved and, you know, taken down and whatever. But basketball was so huge in our house. My brother introduced me to the greatness that is Michael Jordan. So, it was like, wow, okay, I want to play this game and I want to be Michael Jordan. So, we got Double Dribble and we played it. We played the hell out of Double Dribble because, it was one of the first games that I learned, sportsmanship with. I was taught that you don't whine, you don't cry. You play the game, and if you lose, you lose. If you win, you win. That's great. But, you know, take it like a man or woman and, you know, be thankful for your victory and go about your business. Well, Double Dribble was the first game that I really learned that about. And I really enjoyed playing Double Dribble. And I remember starting out, I couldn't do too much. And, of course, my brother, like, beat me all the time. And his hand and eye coordination was far better than my own. I mean, I was 7 and he was 17. So, I mean, he was far better at the game. But he and I sat down and played a lot. And by the time he left home and came back, because he left home to join the military, and he came back, I had mastered Double Dribble, at least on the beginner's level, and challenged him. And I told him, you know, I'm going to beat you because I've been playing since you left and you're not going to beat me anymore. And sure enough, I did. I beat him by 1 point and I was so excited. And I went screaming into my mom's room and I was like, Mama, 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 I beat him. I beat him. I beat him. She's like, that's good, baby. That's real good. I know you practiced. You could tell it wasn't all that big of a deal for her, but it was, she was just, I think she was more surprised. I think he let me win, probably. But that was the start of our quote-unquote rivalry. Also, we would, and he would periodically, when he left for boot camp and he left home, he would call and issue a challenge to me and say, you know, see if you can get to this part in, I don't know, Ninja Gaiden or Super Contra. And I was like, oh, okay, I will. You know, I'll beat you. And he would come back. He would come home every so often from Camp Lejeune. And, you know, he would check up on me and see how well I was doing at my game. And, you know, it got to be, well, by the time I got to be where I could pick out my own games and decide what I wanted for the Nintendo, it kind of went by the wayside. It was more, okay, now I'm going to give you some suggestions of things you should play. And so that's how I got started playing. But my first real purchase, I think, actually the first game that I got that wasn't from my brother was Super Mario Brothers, because we didn't get it with our system. In those days, it was a packing game, and you could count on spending, you know, $250 or $150 and get Super Mario Brothers with your system. I wound up not getting it that way. I actually got a copy of Super Mario Brothers Duck Hunt / Duck Hunt from a friend of mine who, I guess, you know, for my birthday decided, hey, she needs Super Mario Brothers. As I had previously gone to someone's house to play Super Mario Brothers and fell in love with it. I absolutely fell in love with Mario. I did. It was love at first sight. I loved everything about Mario. The challenge, the environment, the music, everything. Even Mario's character design I thought was just hot. I was just like, this is a hot game. I will probably be playing this 15 years from now. And sure enough, 15 years later, I was still playing Mario. I had since mastered it, but I was playing Mario 15 years later. So, I mean, it just, Mario in its purest form is probably one of the greatest games ever made, if not the greatest. It is spectacular. I can't get around how great that game is, just on a basic level. Anybody can pick it up and play it. And I suspect even, you know, in 5 years when I have children, you know, I'll be saying, you know, here, play this, sit down and shut up, don't make any noise. And they'll be playing Mario and trying to get him to jump. So it's, I can't stress how awesome Mario was for me as a 7-year-old. And, you know, then I got a copy of it, finally my own copy of it when I was 8. And just loved it. I mean, I played Mario nonstop. I probably went to school, played Mario, and came back and talked about it, and probably went back home and talked about it and played it. It was that crucial to my gaming experience as a young kid growing up in the South. We didn't really have a whole lot of money. We weren't poor, but we weren't exactly, you know, having money growing on trees in the backyard kind of have money. So I got games twice a year. One depended on whether or not my dad would give me a game for my birthday or not. My mom was always good for buying me a game for my birthday and for Christmas. If I asked her for a specific game, I knew pretty much I would probably get it. It's barring some unforeseen circumstance, such as, you know, it was too expensive or something. I knew her limits, so I knew what I could ask for and what I couldn't ask for. So, I was taught then especially that you only got one system. You better pick one. You either got a Nintendo or you got a Sega Genesis. And if you decided you wanted a Genesis later on down the line, I don't know what to tell you because you weren't going to get one. And as a matter of fact, I didn't even play a Sega Genesis until I was 10 years old. And I was at my dad's house because his stepsons had a Sega Genesis and they had Sonic. And it was the first time I'd ever even heard of Sonic, let alone played Sonic. But Mario was one of my early games that I kept, and I played a lot. The next year, I think I got Galaga at some point. I seem to remember getting Galaga, which was awesome, because that port of Galaga is almost arcade perfect on the NES. Good old Galaga, Demons of Death. I think later on after that, I think when I turned 9, that was the pivotal year. It was all about Super Mario Bros. 3. It was so all about Mario Bros. 3. That game, even today, I'm still playing Mario 3. And I can't say that I've mastered it. It's still kind of hard. That challenge ramps up around about the end of World 5. Once you get to, you're in Sky World and you get to the second part of Sky World and the clouds, it's extremely hard. So I skip a whole lot of stages. But Mario 3, and I got Adventures in the Magic Kingdom, which, in the upcoming quarter, you'll see, we're going to have a story about it, for, I think, Retrograde, which I wrote myself, having played that game and being desperate for games. I don't know why it attracted me so much. I think I rented it from Farmore, if y'all can remember that. Farmore used to be this big, kind of like Target is now. But Farmore was here in South Carolina, and I think a couple in North Carolina. And they used to have a little video rental section. And you could rent games and videos. And I remember going in and renting DuckTales. I rented DuckTales from there. Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, Adventures in the Magic Kingdom, I think. And I played around with a lot of stuff with Adventures in the Magic Kingdom, and that game is awful, but it holds a special place in my heart. It is. It's a special game. It's very special. I don't think I've ever beaten it, as I can't beat the Haunted Mansion level, but it was one of those ones where I had a choice whether or not I wanted to get it, and I asked for it specifically. I think the year after that, because I remember for my 9th birthday, I got Mario 3 and Adventures in the Magic Kingdom. My dad bought Mario 3, and I think my mom bought Adventures in the Magic Kingdom. For my 10th birthday, I don't remember what I got that year. I seem to recall not getting a whole lot of stuff, but I think I got like one or two games. It wasn't all that memorable, but the year after that, when I turned 11, I remember getting Super Mario Brothers 2, because I specifically asked for it to round out the trilogy, and I was really excited about it, and I played Mario 2 briefly. I rented it instead of Mario 3, because I couldn't get Mario 3 when it came out, and because at the time, Blockbuster didn't have this fancy rental policy that they have now, but I couldn't get Mario 3 when I went in to rent it with my mom. So, and I went to several places to get games. I went to Pick-A-Flick, which is, it was a local chain in Columbia, and we used to rent games from there all the time too. We went to Pick-A-Flick and they didn't have it. We went to Blockbuster and they didn't have it. So I was like, okay, well, I got to get something, because, you know, this is my week to rent stuff. So I went and I got Mario 2 and I played it. And I thought, God, this is weird. This is one of the weirdest games I've ever played. But surprisingly, it's hot. It's Mario. I guess I can, you know, I guess I can stick with it. So I stuck with it and I played it. And I liked it. It got hard fast, too. That year, I think the only thing I got for my birthday was Super Mario Brothers 2. The next year, that same year for Christmas, I got my Super Nintendo. And I was so surprised, because I had begged my mama for a year to take me to Target, like once a week, once or twice a week, so I could play Super Mario World. I saw it in the demo and I thought, oh my gosh, this is the second coming almost. Almost. I want this game really bad. When did Nintendo decide they're going to release a new system? Oh my gosh, because I didn't have subscriptions to magazines at that point. So I didn't really know anything about it. I learned everything I had possibly could have learned about video games through word of mouth and through people at school. And I had heard about the Super Nintendo. and I knew a boy who got one when it came out. But, you know, I'm sitting there playing Nintendo games and, you know, I didn't know anything. So, and also, I learned about the games that I knew about by going to different places to rent games. Because that's how I learned through trial and error. I would pick up a game and say, let me try this out and see how this works. And sometimes it might be a bad one, and sometimes it might be a good one. So, I didn't really know about what was going on with the Super Nintendo. I just knew they kind of sort of released it, but I didn't know when they were going to. So, when they released it, and I saw it in the Target, I almost had a stroke. I immediately ran over and wanted to play it. I wanted to play it so much. And I remember someone had gotten to the end of the game about 2 weeks after that. Someone had gotten to the end of the game, and I saw the end of the game where you fight Bowser in his little clown copter. And I was just, like, awestruck. I was so awestruck. And I told Mama, I was like, Mama, we have to get this game. I have to get this. This is crucial, Mother. I have to have this. And I suppose I was a good child at that point. So I had to wait a whole nother year. I had to wait until 1992. It was Christmas of 92. And I got my Super Nintendo. I opened it up. I was so surprised on Christmas morning because I didn't know that she'd bought it already. And I opened it up and I screamed. And I remember there's a picture, they got a picture of me, one of my family members took a picture of me on Christmas morning with hair rollers, my hair up in rollers, and a cap on so that, you know, I can keep my rollers in place, and me holding up my Super Nintendo box, screaming. And it was the funniest picture, and I wish I could find it now. I cannot find that picture, but it is so funny. I was so excited. That was quite possibly the best Christmas morning ever. I really thought that was the best Christmas morning ever. So I immediately unhooked my Nintendo and hooked up my Super Nintendo and booted up Super Mario World and just, oh man, I ran through the first three levels because I played it so much I knew what to do. And I mean, I must have played for 2 hours. I didn't even unwrap the rest of my gifts. I waited till I got to my grandmother's house to unwrap the rest of my gifts. But I was so excited. It was quite possibly the best Christmas morning ever. I think the year after that, I wound up getting, for my birthday the next year, in 93, I got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time. That would be TMNT4. And, Spider-Man and the X-Men and Arcade's Revenge. Which, if any of you have ever kept up with me, you know that I'm a huge Marvel geek. I am probably one of the biggest Marvel Comics fans out there. I know a lot about the X-Men. Let's put it that way. I have an exhaustive knowledge of the X-Men. And at the time, X-Men the Animated Series was on TV. And every Saturday, I got up and watched it faithfully at 11 o'clock on Fox. I could be going somewhere out doing something and demand to be home at that point to watch X-Men. Same thing with Spider-Man. The Fox animated version of Spider-Man was really, really good. So when that game came out, I demanded that I had to have that one for my birthday. And I got it. And to this day, I've not mastered that game. But I also, when I got TMNT4, I'm a huge Ninja Turtles fan also. I mean, even now, I'm huge into Ninja Turtles. Which, consequently, I have both of those series on DVD. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series, the animated cartoon series, 1987, which was very, very awesome. I have theme song memorized. Also, I have the X-Men series on DVD as well, which I got for my birthday. Consequently, I got it for my birthday. I remember it was a different time then. I mean, kids, cartoons weren't as big anymore. They were going through that phase where cartoons were really getting phased out and wasn't so much of a big deal anymore, but those two cartoons just wow. They were instrumental in me playing video games, because if not for that X-Men animated series, I would not have played the X-Men arcade game, which was awesome with the four-player team-ups, and I wouldn't have played TMNT2, the arcade game, either, which was really, really awesome and had the four-player team-ups. speaking of the arcade, that was right about the time I got my early arcade roots in the early 1990s. And, man, those were the days. I can't stress how awesome that time was. Arcades were kind of, sort of, they were starting to decline a little bit, but it wasn't on its last legs as it is now. There's, the difference between then and now in arcades is so great that you can't imagine the difference. If you didn't go to arcades then, you can't imagine the prominence that they had in the early 90s. And they were on the decline then. They weren't even, that wasn't even at its heyday then. But even then, arcades were so important to gaming. I mean, games came out in the arcade then, and you had to wait before they came home. It's not like it is now where, you know, a major fighting game won't even get released in an arcade. It's a miracle if it's released in an arcade, even in Japan. Now, it's, you get it at home first, and then it's like, oh, well, we may give you an update in the arcade. Probably not, but we might give you one, as is the case with Tekken 6, that's getting ready to come out. The thing about arcades back then was you learned. You got schooled in the arcades. If you went, and if you were like me, you were like in your, you were a little preteen at the beginning of the 90s. I didn't know anything about arcade etiquette. So when I went, not only was it was, you were schooled by veterans on how to play games. You were schooled in how to act in the arcade. You didn't go in and run around and make all this kind of noise and disrupt games and hang all on machines and carry on. No, you went in there, that was serious business. You went in to play. And when you ran out of money, you either bummed some money from someone or you left. There was, I mean, you didn't loiter around the arcade for no reason. You were there for a reason. And now I go to arcades, a few that are left, and I look at them and I think, my God, how far have we fallen? I mean, what is this? This isn't even an arcade. They don't have any fighting games. I went to Raleigh and went to Adventure Landing, and they had no fighting games. None. There were none in the building. And I just was like, what is the point of this place even being open? I mean, its sole saving grace was the fact that it had DDR Supernova 2. And that was it. I mean, there was no reason to be there. I played a couple of games of Supernova 2 and left. I was like, there's no point for me to be here. There's nothing in here I want to play. I mean, they had Guitar Hero Arcade, but I don't play Guitar Hero, so that was pointless for me. But I look at arcades and I think, this is desolate. This is a desolate landscape. This is post-apocalyptic warfare kind of landscape. What are we going to do? I mean, there are no arcades left. And the ones that are left, they're far away from me. I mean, they're in New Jersey, New York, California. I mean, I'm on the East Coast. There's no way I'm going all the way to California to play in you know, fighting games or whatever. But, I mean, I might make this trip up to, there's an arcade in New Hampshire that's supposed to be really, really good. And they have a lot of old school games. And I suspect they take care of their machines. But, I mean, it'll make you cry if you remember the old days of arcades. But thinking back, man, that was the days. That was the days. I spent so much time in the arcades then, and the thing I played the most was Mortal Kombat. I played Mortal Kombat 1. when it first came out, I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention. And then I was kind of like, that game's kind of gory. I wonder what that's about. And then, by then, 2 had already come out. And 2 was so big. It was so big in Colombia. 2, I remember specifically being in Aladdin's Castle in Columbia Mall, which is now called Columbia Place. But Aladdin's Castle, which was my home away from home, had 2 MK2 machines. They had to put monitors on top of the MK2 machines because so many people played it that you couldn't see around the machine. And if you wanted to watch matches, you just out of luck. I mean, you couldn't see anything. And I loved going to Aladdin's Castle anytime during the week and getting good comp there. Oh my gosh, the competition in MK2 was phenomenal. You could not go out there and play and not know what you were doing. You couldn't go out there and not know what you were doing and come back without having learned something. I specifically remember there was a guy named Ken, and I don't remember his last name. He was a couple years older than myself, and I was 12 years old. And one night, it was surprisingly dull in the arcade. It had wound down, and I was timid, and I went over to the MK2 machine. And I was trying to learn how to play. I had already said, I'm going to teach myself how to play this game. And the Ken came over and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, "I don't know. Will you help me?" I told him, I said, "I've seen you over here playing a couple of times, and you're really good. Will you teach me how to play?" And he said, "Okay, little girl, I'll teach you how to play." And for the next hour, he showed me how to do moves. He showed me how to throw ice with Sub-Zero. He showed me how to do Scorpion Spear. He taught me the basics of that game. He sat down with me and said, "This is what you need to know to get started." And to this day, I wish if I could find Ken, I would thank him, because that is one of the few times I've ever seen a veteran reach back and help a young player come up who didn't know anything about the game. Ken was so nice. He was such a nice guy. And he had an infinite amount of patience, because I know I could not get the hang of throwing that ice with Sub-Zero for at least 2 weeks. And then I finally got it. One day it just clicked. And I got it. I understood the whole moving the joystick and pressing the button at the same time and getting it to come out consistently. And after that, I challenged Ken for the next probably 3 years. I would see him, and I would go down to an arcade and get in a whole bunch of practice, because on Saturday mornings, the local arcade crew knew me. They knew me when I walked in the door. They were like, "Oh, hey, Lindsay, how are you doing?" And I was like, "Hey, you know what I'm here for." And they would give me free credits, and I would play until my credits ran out. And then I might play something else, and I might go home. But they were a real nice bunch of people. And they would give me access to play. Well, Ken would come in, and Ken say, hey there, girly, how you doing? You know, and I'm like, oh crap, it's Ken. I'm about to die now. Okay, I know my game is up for the next hour or so. And he would come in, and he would do some things, school me a couple of games, and then he'd go home. But he got in his practice. Ken and I had a rivalry going back and forth, because, you know, here I was, student, and he was mentor. And he taught me so much. He even taught me advanced moves. I mean, like advanced combo strategies in MK2, which MK2 in its infinite wisdom was probably the best, one of the best upgrades between games. The difference between 1 and 2 was so great that it was, it was supposed to be a whole nother game. 2 was where they really got serious. 1, they were kind of sort of serious, but 2, they were really serious. Ken and I went back and forth between 2 and 3. And it was a strong rivalry. I got so good where at 2 where I could beat him. And when 3 came out, I remember specifically playing with Sindel, who is my favorite character in 3. She's my absolute favorite character. I can play almost anyone in 3. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty certain I can play anybody in 3, given enough time. You know, say give me about 10 minutes to warm up and practice, and I can play anybody in 3. And same thing with 2. I mastered all the characters. But I remember going to Aladdin's Castle one day and playing when 3 had come out, because they were still handing out move sheets. And I played with Sindel, and I won a couple of rounds. And I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention. I was looking at my move sheet and making sure I learned, you know, all of her major moves. And I saw, you know, somebody reach down and put token in the machine. And I said, oh, okay, got another challenger. Well, I look up, and here's Ken looking down at me like, hey, how you doing, girl? I was like, oh, crap. I'm about to get owned. And Ken proceeded to pick Sindel and whoop my butt. Oh, my gosh, he whooped my butt. It was close, but I was struggling. I know I was struggling. And Ken thanked me very graciously and said, hey, I see you learning how to play Sindel. And I said, well, of course. You're learning how to play Sindel. Of course I'm going to learn how to play her. I mean, I'm not going to not play Sindel. So he showed me a couple of ground combos to use with Sindel. And he was the one that showed me the 6-hit, 40% damage combo that starts with, you could either start with high kick or low kick. You could do high kick, high punch, low punch, down high punch to pop them up, jump kick, air fireball, and it does like 6 hits. I could be wrong in the immediate move set, but I know that it's 6 hits, 40% damage. He also showed me her ground combo, which is like high kick, high punch, high punch, low punch, high punch, back, high kick, or something like that. Something like that. I know it when I do it. And then, you know, throw a fireball directly after. He had already mastered Sindel at this point. So, I was just soaking it all up. But I just remember it being, it was a fun time then. It was so fun, for me to go to the arcade and play and, you know, establish camaraderie with the guys who are sitting there like, you know, hey man, have you seen, you know, do this combo with Cabal, or, you know, do this combo with Johnny Cage with a split punch and a forward, you know, high kick. I mean, it was that kind of thing. We traded tips and secrets back and forth. And this was in the days before the internet blew up. So you really had to learn things by word of mouth. There was no such thing as internet to put your videos up, or internet to trade your combo facts or anything. This was before Game Facts, okay? This was long before Game Facts. I remember being in school. I was in the 8th grade about that point, and I spent so much time playing Mortal Kombat 2 and 3. I had a wall devoted in my house to it, in my bedroom, because we lived in an apartment across the street from my school. Well, my room in our apartment, there was just a whole wall devoted to Mortal Kombat. I mean, I had pictures, I had boxes, I had things that people had drawn for me. I had, I even came up with an idea for a little Mortal Kombat car game that they had in, I think it was Deception, much later. And I realized I had come up with that idea years before, in 94. This was like 2004 or 2005. And I'm sitting there looking at this and I'm going, you know, I could be rich right about now. That's how much I played Mortal Kombat. If I had sent my idea in to Midway, which is now, you know, bankrupt and owned by Warner Brothers, I could have possibly been rich. That's how crucial that was. My little game was based off of Super Mario Kart. And little characters used weapons and drove around little stages based off of Mortal Kombat. And I wish I kept my plans, but I, something told me not to, to turn it in or anything, so I didn't. But, I mean, it's just stuff like that. It was the fact that I was, and probably still am, one of the best players in Columbia for MK2. Oh, there's far better people. I'm not even going to lie. There are people who are far better than I am. There's a guy in Atlanta named Clint. And if you're listening, Clint, I love you, man. But you whooped my ass. Clint was probably one of the best finesse players I'd ever seen. He was fast, and he got his moves to come off so fast and so precise that you couldn't do anything. You had to be as good and as fast as Clint to be Clint. So, I mean, it's little stuff like that these days that I miss arcades. I think back to that time where I was so engrossed with Mortal Kombat, and I think, wow, arcades have so fallen back now. And I wish we could go back to those times. I really do. I wish if I had a time machine of some sort, I would go back to that time in my life. Husband notwithstanding, I would go back to that time in my life, and I would tell myself then, you know, hey, time paradox be damned. You know, savor this time while you can, because it won't be here in, you know, in the future. You will not have this. It's going by the wayside now, so you better get out, take pictures while you can, and enjoy this time in your life, because shortly there's going to be a thing called life. It's going to sneak up on you, and it's called bills. And you will not be able to play Mortal Kombat as much as you are right now, because I probably, having met myself then, would be playing Mortal Kombat with myself, which is a time paradox and would probably cause a black hole to occur in a rip in the time fabric of some kind. But yeah, I mean, I wish that there was some way to go back and take hold of that time and just freeze it and enjoy it. And I would be able to tell my kids, you know, hey man, I got to travel around then and play Mortal Kombat with other people, instead of reading about it on the internet years later, such as, you know, Pro Night in Florida, which I would have loved to have gone to. But, I mean, it's that kind of thing that makes you think back and go, my God, what was I doing? what was I doing at all? Does anybody know? Do you remember what you were doing then? And why didn't you take advantage of it? So, I mean, it weighs heavily on my mind now as a 28-year-old, but I guess I'll get over it eventually. My favorite old school games. This is going to be part two, but of this podcast. But my favorite old school games. I'd have to say Ninja Gaiden. The original Ninja Gaiden, that would be the Tecmo Presents 1989 version of Ninja Gaiden, because it was hard, but I loved it. Super C, that too. That was so crucial. I love that game. I play a lot of it too. Which, of course, you can see the video of Super C on our YouTube account and on our website if you or listening and checking that out. You can go and watch the video of me playing Super C, run through the first couple of stages. Boy, I was badass on that second stage with my spreader. I had to put codes on, but I got my spreader and I was just rolling through the second stage. And I remember just how much I really liked to play Super C. The third game's Super Mario Brothers, which, I mean, I've espoused enough on how much I love Super Mario Brothers, but to this day, I can probably go, probably in about 20 minutes, I'm going to get up from here and go play Super Mario Brothers. That's how crucial that is. Galaga, you've heard me talk about Galaga. Good old Demons of Death. Track and Field 2. Track and Field 2 was the second sports game that I played, and it was the first one that my brother really sat down and mastered. And I remember learning how to play it with him and him giving me tips and tricks to sit down and play it. Track and Field 2, we went out and bought an NES Max controller to play Track and Field 2. And we realized we needed it for like the archery section. And once we got it, oh, we mastered archery. The fencing was still hard. The diving was a little hard, but I figured out how to do that. The pole vault and the jumping, that was really hard. And the triple jump was real hard, too. But archery, I think archery is probably one of my favorite games. A lot of Konami stuff on this list, by the way. And the other one is probably DuckTales. Because DuckTales, I love the cartoon DuckTales, and I also have that on DVD. I loved DuckTales cartoon version. So, naturally, I played the NES version. The music in DuckTales was awesome, and the gameplay was pretty good. I mean, Scrooge McDuck's, like, pogo sticking mess was a little crazy, but, matter of fact, just the other day, I beat DuckTales on the NES. I sat down and played it, and I got a whole bunch of money in all of my stages, and then I got mad because Flint Heart Glomgold came and took my money. So, I had to pogo stick in his face. but DuckTales is one of my favorites, and I still pick it up and play it to this day. As a matter of fact, I played Ninja Gaiden, too, while I was at it. I really like those six games just because they're the very fabric of my gaming memories. They're all six of those are somehow or another etched into my video game memories. They're a huge part of them. I can tell you what I was doing and what year it was when I got each of those games. And they all made such an impact on me that, you know, I can remember key moments, you know, 20 years later after playing some of these things. So, you know, it's you gotta respect your background and you gotta respect your elder games. Sure, they have a couple of design flaws that sometimes are a little, they'll make you want to throw the controller, but that's what makes them so unique and important to your video game history. But, you know, it's all part and parcel. I mean, like, some people don't like those games. There are some people I know that are not fans of Mario. I mean, how you could not be a fan of Mario, I don't know, but I just can't even wrap my mind around that. I don't even understand anybody could hit that out of anything, but I mean, you know, to each his own. If you don't like Mario, you don't like Mario. Just have respect for your elder games. And respect where you came from and where you started out with certain games. It's like these people these days, they're all, ooh, I love Sony, I love Sony, I love Sony, I hate Nintendo. Well, you know, the way I think of it is, if there was no Nintendo, there's no Sony. Because without Nintendo reviving the industry in 1984 or 85 after the video game crash, there would be no Sony. Sony wouldn't even be in the game right now. They wouldn't be. Neither would Microsoft. They wouldn't even bother to make a system. So, I mean, you know, people can hate on Nintendo, and that's all fine and well. I mean, you know, you don't like Nintendo, you just don't like them. But give them their props where their props are due. You know, don't be sitting there hating on Nintendo and forget that without Nintendo, there would not be a video game industry to be playing with right now. So, I mean, just respect your elders. That's all I'm saying. So, this concludes my weekly editor's podcast. Hope you enjoyed listening to me ramble on about my video game background. Hope to have one next week and, you know, talk about video game issues that are pressing and on my mind. And possibly have that special guest. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.